Hello and welcome to Mind the Chat, the podcast for Mind in Kingston about all things mental health. I'm Vicky Bourne, the charity's counselling and wellbeing coordinator. Coming up, it's Mental Health Awareness Week, and the theme this year is nature, something that's become increasingly important to us during the last 12 months. So I've come to meet someone who knows and appreciates just how vital nature is to mental wellbeing.
I think the thing about being out in nature, whether you're working in it or you're out in it fairly regularly, is that whatever is going on, nothing stops the seasons and nothing stops that rhythm and that sort of life, new life. And I'm really, really convinced that for anybody, just being outside and moving is a way of actually enabling your brain to produce the right hormones, chemicals, that gives it a little bit of respite.
Rosie Files is the head gardener at Ham House, a National Trust property near Richmond in Surrey. She took me for a tour around the wonderful gardens.
Currently we're standing in the woodland garden, which is called the Wilderness. It has 16 compartments of hornbeam hedges, which we cut at least twice a year. And it's a space that is very well tended, but is intended to make you feel like you're in the countryside and you've got your own space and place to breathe.
Rosie started our tour in the garden's designated silent space, a part of the garden which is dotted with wooden summer houses.
People choose to come in here and spend time, often on their own, and relax. And it's a very sort of tranquil woodland planting with lots and lots of different shades of green in May.
So you're the trustee of something called Silent Spaces, and can you tell us a bit about that?
Silent Space was a charity set up to encourage gardens and outdoor spaces to set aside an area for silence for their visitors. And I think it was in a response to a lot of gardens having much more use by families and it being harder to find somewhere where people could be comfortable on their own or just sit together in silence. And it's a very simple. It's not monitored or policed. It's just encouraging people to enjoy a space a bit differently. And it's international now, I think America, Australia, New Zealand. So it's a website just called Silent Space that people can go to and find gardens that have silent spaces for them to enjoy.
And I was reading all about how some of the ideas were based on The Anatomy of Melancholy by Robert Burton, who found that walking in wild wildernesses were a real cure for his depression.
Yeah, and I think that whole concept of sort of melancholy perhaps has changed slightly. I think of the word melancholy and think of a kind of sadness, whereas I think in the 17th century, melancholy was probably much closer to our ideas of mindfulness and taking some time for yourself and enjoying sort of silence and perhaps thinking through the more challenging things of life without being scared of them or pressing them down. It was the idea that you would encourage yourself to think through these ideas. And the walk on the other side of the garden, on the east side of the garden, is called Melancholy Walk. That was so named because that's what you were encouraged to do. So the space that we're in now and that walk was about spending time on your own, looking after yourself, I guess.
Absolutely, and that's something that I think we've become so aware of this year, haven't we, where nature has become particularly important to people and having green spaces and somewhere to go.
We've really noticed that the number of people who are coming locally repeatedly into the garden has increased enormously, which is lovely for us because it means people feel at home and feel like they can enjoy something that's changing and growing and hopefully a sense of kind of progress and life in amongst all the stress of the last year or two. But I think what we've been much more aware of is people are telling us that that's what they're doing and that's what they're enjoying. Yeah, it's a really changed atmosphere, and you know, it's one of those things where you think actually it's probably something that you would categorise as a benefit of the last year and a half. In amongst it all, the number of people that have said that they've found a sort of peace and a space to reflect in a garden and notice things about nature that they never would have done before is just astonishing.
So how did you first become interested in gardening, Rosie? How did you get into it?
My uncle was a very keen gardener, and he got me growing annuals when I was about 6 and 7. And then I went off on a university corporate career, and then I kind of got towards my 40s and thought I want to do something different. So I set myself some goals and achieved them, and started retraining to be a gardener after 16, 17 years in corporate communications. Even last week I was talking to someone and they said, you know, it's my dream job. And yes, it is, and yes, I'm incredibly fortunate, but it's still a job.
Of course, and hard work, and a big responsibility.
And I think it's been a surprise to me how turning what was my hobby and kind of my sort of unwinding pleasure into a job, and the adjustment that that's taken. So when I go on holiday, I don't visit gardens.
I can imagine, I can understand that. So going back to your career in the corporate world, and you've obviously made a very big change, and very successfully too, and I wondered what do you feel it is, having lived those two kinds of lives, about being in nature and working in gardens and beautiful spaces like this, that really speaks to people and becomes very important to their lives?
In one way, it's very similar. So, you know, the kind of politics of work and the demands of work are very, very similar. The sort of pay levels changed. But I think, and I've thought about this a lot over the last year, I think the thing about being out in nature, whether you're working in it or you're out in it fairly regularly, is that whatever is going on, nothing stops the seasons and nothing stops that rhythm and that sort of life, new life, you know, and it's reliable.
Reliable, but also
kind of there's a level of sort of speed about it at times, so the pace changes, and then there's a level of surprise. It does things you perhaps can't predict or weren't expecting it to. And I'm really, really convinced that for anybody, just being outside and moving is a way of actually enabling your brain to produce the right hormones, chemicals, that gives it a little bit of respite. And I know for me that's a massive thing. And I think once you get used to it, then you miss it if you don't do it. So perhaps it's quite an interesting idea for people that have been working at home and perhaps have got used to a rhythm of going out for walks every day and all of that. How do you then consider the future when you might be commuting again? How do you keep that kind of space and rhythm in your life? And it comes down to a level of sort of discipline. But I think for me, it's changing the priorities and making sure that that time outside, noticing things and allowing my mind not to be on the next meeting or the next project, it is a big, big step in the right direction.
How has it sort of personally changed for you, Rosie? How has your quality of life changed and your everyday mental health?
The sort of basics of the quality of life. I used to do a lot of travelling, and I now realise what that was sort of taking out of me. Just the sheer level of tiredness and the way your body kind of just builds up that tiredness. So now I have a much more sort of conducive rhythm to my life to be healthy. I have to say, I think it's still my working environment. So the things that matter to somebody working in an office, working in a hospital, still matter here as well. So that kind of mutual respect, consideration, recognition, reward, all of those things, when you're sort of putting your heart and soul into a garden, are perhaps even more important than when you're delivering a speech for a CEO, you know. So I guess in some ways it's absolutely pouring with rain now, and we should be practicing what we're talking about and staying out in it, but I think we're going to move.
So we've come in again out of the rain, back into this wonderful summer house.
Yeah, so I think the working life is quite different. I guess I have a more autonomy now. The types of people I work with are very different now.
And you work with over 70 volunteers, I gather, too.
Yeah, and the really interesting thing for me is a lot of the volunteers reflect the people I would have been working with in my previous career. You know, we have people sort of in the borders with us reading who've had the most amazing careers. Diplomats, finance directors, journalists, you
know. Ex-architect, I know.
Yes, yes. In some ways that can be a little bit daunting, thinking you've got all this talent, but actually it's been an absolute resource for me and an encouragement for me to have people like that to talk about things with, to get their sort of thoughts on things that we're doing, things we're considering changing. And during the last year or so, the ability for people to come and volunteer has been a really significant thing in their lives, because the lives have been so restricted and we've been able to have people volunteering outside. It seems to have been a really, really positive thing for everybody, actually, to realise that actually it's quite important, this, that we do for us, for ourselves. Gardening is a great leveller. So it doesn't matter what you've done, where you come from, you're all pulling the same weeds.
Well, I went to meet one of the volunteers at Ham House.
Yeah, I'm Chris Poole. I'm the chairman of the European Boxwood and Topiary Society and also a volunteer here at Ham House.
So tell us a bit about being a volunteer here. How does that work and how often are you here?
So I'm here about twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays at the moment, although it varies sometimes. Mainly focusing for me, I'm focusing on the boxwood and clipping of the yew hedges and so on.
You've obviously made a huge difference to Ham and everything that you've given to Ham, but what's it given back to you? What do you get out of being a volunteer?
What it gives to me is stability, a sense of calm when I'm here. Even though I'm quite often clipping things and so on, for me that gives my inner, I can't think of anything else while I'm doing it, so it gives me a break.
Mindful.
Absolutely. Yeah. It gives me a break from everything else that's going on around me. It's not been easy through the lockdown stuff, and I've had some issues which coming here on a regular basis has helped me calm myself, calm my thoughts and slow myself down, because the plants, although sometimes when they're growing at the speed they are at the moment, you're not so sure they are slow, but they are a calming, slower growth, and it just grounds you. And
it's box heaven, of course.
It is absolutely box heaven. We have a couple of kilometres, I think, of, Rosie will know exactly how many kilometres of box, low box hedge we've got around the place. But it's that mix of formality, and I like things tidy and neat, not surprisingly, when I clip all these hedges and so on. But it's also the mixture of the formality and structure and the nature doing its thing and relaxing stuff, particularly when you get into the wilderness area where you've got the structure of the hedges, but then inside the hedges you've got all that relaxation into nature, and you go in and you just feel a calm come over you. It never ceases to bring a smile to my face in this place. It's just, I love it. So I'm just about to clip a box cone using our electric hedge clippers.
Can you tell us a bit about this structure here, Rosie?
Yeah, so we're looking at one of the four summer houses. They're made of wood and they're replicas of what would have been here in the 18th century. And their spaces for shelter.
We'll just go inside and have a look at what's in there.
So inside, every month, we have a changing series of quotes, and they're chosen by members of staff on site. And people tend to choose things that mean something to them, that provoke some calming, tranquil thoughts. The retail manager of Ham House and Garden, yeah, Emily's chosen the words for this month's silent space.
And they're particularly lovely words, I think, aren't they? Sometimes, said the horse. Sometimes what, asked the boy. Sometimes just getting up and carrying on is brave and magnificent. So that's from Charlie Maxey, the boy, the mole, the fox and the horse. But go back out now. One of the things you've been doing is providing food for food banks. I mean, all the wonderful produce that you grow here.
Yeah, and that simply wouldn't have really come about, I think we would have been in the a track of, you know, growing food for the cafe, growing food for visitors to buy. And this time last year, we'd all been off work, well, not off work, working from home for 3 weeks, and then we were asked to come back into the garden. I'm kind of a bit worried about what we'd find, but actually the garden did very, very well on its own. And even without looking after a vegetable garden that's been going for so many years, you're still going to have crops, you're still going to have produce. And we sort of looked at it and thought, we just can't deal with this volume without having the cafe open or a way to sell, and we were shut. So we got in touch with Richmond Food Bank, and it's been something that's just been so heartening for everybody. So we didn't have to waste any food. And the produce that's gone to the food bank, they've literally accepted and been joyful about everything, you know, even the slightly more unusual 17th century items. But also we've given flowers, and at first we were a little bit unsure about whether posies were the right thing, and whether it seemed a little bit flippant. And actually we're told that some of their clients get in touch every week to tell them how long their flowers are lasting, and it's just opened up, and as you say, another kind of way of relating to people. And our commitment now is to carry on doing it. So we're balancing it out and growing things slightly differently, so we can now supply three channels rather than the two that we were doing. So it's another benefit, I think, for us to be doing something so meaningful, I guess.
And you're planting very much with climate change in mind, I gather, too.
Yes, well, that's partly necessity. The temperature extremes here have been really, really striking in the last years. And so a lot of the planting in the formal areas of the garden is period planting. So plants would have been here in the 1680s. And actually, ironically, most of those plants were sourced from the Mediterranean. So they're the ones that will thrive in our changing climate. So we've had to move around a lot of things and think about things differently. But ultimately, we're now looking at planting more trees, planting different types of trees, and planting things that will thrive in the space that they're going to be in, because that's really the only way of planting sustainably. So not looking at kind of all the work the gardeners can do to keep them thriving in that spot, but looking at how they would thrive naturally and just encouraging that. So reducing water use, reducing pest control and all those sorts of things. It's an enormous, enormous sort of daunting subject. But I think each time you sort of do something that saves some water or encourages some wildlife, even in a small way, if everyone was doing that, it would add up to a massive contribution. And we think in those terms too. So every time we replant something somewhere where it's not going to need to be watered as much is a step in the right direction.
And you've got 45 different species of wasps and bees too, I was reading.
Yes. So that's just a result, really, of the change in planting. And I'm not an expert on wasps and bees, but literally if a plant is close to its species, so it's not been bred and bred and bred again, it's more likely to enable wildlife to thrive, so the pollen is more available to them. And so sort of returning back to those period plants and putting them in the right spot has increased the number of bees and wasps and the number of pollinators. And in the cherry garden, which is a lot of bare soil and a lot of lavender, that the buzzing in there and just the life in there is extraordinary, and it makes all the weeding worthwhile.
Yeah.
Seeing those wasps.
I was speaking there to Rosie Files, head gardener at Ham House. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please think about subscribing and maybe leaving a review. And listen to some of our back editions too. They're available wherever you normally download your podcasts. I'm Vicky Bourne of Mind in Kingston, and I'm going to leave you with some wonderful sounds from the natural world at Ham House.